Welcome, everybody, to the Hammer and Rails podcast. With you as always, I'm your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Ryan Bonaparte.
And we're here today to recap a pretty rough week for Purdue Athletics. You know, we were with you a few weeks back when it was one of the best weeks of Purdue Athletics. Purdue had clinched the division. Purdue had beaten everybody and their brother out in the Phil Knight Invitational. And then we come to this week, and Purdue, of course, loses in the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl. And then, once again, plays Rutgers as Purdue is number one ranked, and they lose on a last-second three from Rutgers. I mean, granted, a lot more time left in this game than the one from last year, but as Yogi Berra famously said, it's deja vu all over again. So we're going to put that off to the second half of the podcast and then look ahead to kind of the next week in the Big Ten schedule. But Ryan, I want to give you the chance. You covered the game for us. You actually went down to Orlando. Tell us, how was covering your first game with a media credential?
Oh, it's nice when you get to access different parts of the stadium that you've never been to before. Mm-hmm. Like, finding a press box for someone who has never done it before can be intimidating.
Were you walking around like a kid at his first day of school, just kind of like had your little like notes in front of you and were like head up looking around?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, they have signs that say press box, but you have to go several paces forward, then you have to turn right, then you have to find the elevator, make sure you get to the correct floor. I tried about three different floors.
Oh, they didn't have before I could get there. They didn't have somebody like working in the elevator?
They did, but sometimes, you know, those people just don't know where the press box is either. Yeah. They know, you know, Suites, Plaza, or whatever. So you'd think they'd have like a press level or something, but it was just all in the suites, which in hindsight I should have realized, but hey, you know, I was just beside myself.
Well, I assume this was
before depression kicked in.
Yeah, I assume this was your first time even in this stadium in general, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I mean, it's, I don't think anybody can blame you for not knowing exactly where you're supposed to go. You know, when I covered the Big Ten championship game for football, I had been to Lucas Oil before, so I was a little bit more familiar with it. But also, I mean, Indianapolis knows how to run an event. So they had a gentleman in the elevator, you know, and they had special signs in there, like, if you're covering the game for press, go to this level, you know, and so forth. So they did a pretty good job with it. So, all right, you found where you were going. And I think I asked you this, or we talked about this in the last podcast. Were Cheez-It available? Because apparently it's Cheez-It, not Cheez-Its. Were Cheez-It available for the media as part of their media food?
As every single function they had, they were available.
Good.
I got a box of them. I got the commemorative Purdue versus LSU box.
I did not know that was a thing.
Sold for $25.
Oh wow! In the stadium?
Yeah. Yep, it was the stadium box. It had, like, the football, it was, like, the leather, you know?
Yeah.
Indentations. So, I got the fanciest box of Cheez-It you can imagine.
Now, did you open the box? Did you open the box, or are you saving all those Cheez-It to remember this lovely game?
I have yet to open the box.
Okay.
However, that's not to say I won't.
Yeah, you never know. You never know after a really bad Purdue game, you'd be like, you know, I'm just going to eat the cheese, and it's fine. So we get our Cheez-It. We're there. I understand you and Gabby met because Gabby was also there covering the game for us. Give us your first impression of meeting Gabby, and we'll find out if she truly listens to the pod.
Well, can confirm we are both real, as okay. I put in the group chat.
Yeah, but I mean, someone who, it's hard to say if someone who wasn't real would tell us, you know what I mean?
Right, for sure. So, Gabby and I actually, we met, we then realized, hey, they are giving media free food, so we went on an adventure to find it, and that was a whole ordeal in itself, because it wasn't at the same place as everything else. So we went and found food, and then after a little bit, Gabby did go into the stand. She became a fan. I'm sure that was a fun time. I didn't have any other tickets, so I was in the press box, but good time.
Yeah.
Nice and sunny. Needed sunglasses for sure, but had a really nice experience as part of the press prior to the game.
Yeah, yeah. So one last question before we get to the game. How was the media food once you found it?
Well, because we were on an adventure, it took
a while. Oh, you were late and you didn't get any, just like I told you. I warned you about this.
Well, we did. We found it. It was just a little bit not on the warm side.
It was probably picked over, too, wasn't it?
We got breakfast burritos at about 12 o'clock.
Okay. That's not bad.
But they did give us food at halftime.
Yes.
They gave us Chick-fil-A sandwiches, which were spot on.
Good, good.
So
at the Big Ten Championship game, I missed the dinner. The only thing they had left when I got there were rolls. So I had some rolls. They were good, but like, come on. And then at halftime, they put out pizza. So that was nice. So I took it. I took some pizza, and they had cookies later on, so I had some of those. But, you know, the media, like I said in the last episode, is just ravenous, man. That anything free, as my friend Thomas says, if it's free, it's me. So that's kind of the media view when they put the food out. So I'm glad we could at least have you have a good time down there. We could get you to the game and have you cover it. A lot of fun before the game started. The teams traded punts in the first two possessions, traded punts. After that, all downhill. Final score, of course, LSU 63, Purdue 7. I mean, what was it like watching that in person? I mean, were you just like, oh no, oh no, oh no, and then at a certain point it just becomes comical?
Yes, to an extent. So I know you told me that you're not allowed to cheer in the press box, and it was easy not to.
Right.
So
that's a good point. That's a good point.
So
it's hard to break the rules when you have nothing to cheer for.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was clearly an overmatched Purdue team. There were so many holes with opt-outs. You know, you can't – it was unavoidable, and just – it's an SEC school, and their top quarterback didn't opt out. You knew this was going to come. And as you said, he scares the bejesus out of you, and rightfully so. I mean, he had a great day. Mm-hmm. Their other quarterback that they were swapping in and out between drives had a great day. Their third quarterback came in and had
a decent day.
Little bit of a day. Yeah, I mean, it's just they had all the talent in the world on the field, even with their couple opt-outs, but Purdue just had way too many holes from what it looked like an almost disinterested coaching staff or head coach, I should say, interim head coach.
Yeah.
It was set up for failure. And at the end of the game, we were all just sort of wondering, is Devin Mockabee going to get to 80 yards?
That's my question. I wanted to talk about that, so I'm glad you brought it up. You know, coming into the game, Mockabee had 920 yards. He was just 80 yards away from being the first Purdue running back to have 1,000 yards, I think we said, since Corey Sheets. And and yet he only had 13 carries.
Yeah, it was rough. I mean, there were a couple stretches in the third and fourth quarter where Devin Mockabee just wasn't on the field for a drive.
Yeah, and you know, I was, of course, running the Twitter account, and people are just adding me like, hey, is Mockabee hurt? Why is Mockabee not out there? And I hadn't seen anything. I hadn't heard anything. I'm looking around trying to find information, and I can't see a thing about him being injured. It's just he wasn't out there, and I can't understand not putting your best offensive player at this point. I mean, without a doubt, he was the best offensive player Purdue had, and he just was off the field for drives at a time.
Yeah. I will say, in his stead, Tyrone Tracy came in. He had some nice rushes.
Yes.
I mean, he had 4 carries for 26 yards, so not too bad, but just you really wanted that for Devin Mockabee.
Yeah.
And there were just drives at a time he wouldn't be out there, and then in the fourth quarter he came out, he got back-to-back rushes, and you almost wonder if the coaching staff looked at it like, all right, we're down 49-0, we have to pass only. But at that point, you're not coming back.
No.
Yeah.
No. And I understand in some sense putting Tyrone Tracy Jr. out there because it's his last year. He's a senior. He's a transfer. You know, show him, hey, you know, it was worth it for you to come here. He hasn't had a great year. He's had some good plays. He probably got more offensive use than he would have at Iowa for sure. But give him the chance. I get that. But at the same time, you got a kid in Devin Mockabee who is close to hitting a huge milestone as a now former walk-on, mm-hmm. you got to do everything you can to give him the ball and get him those yards. Even if it's, you know, 2 to 3 yards at a time, you know, you he's had 30 carries in a game before. And in this game, as I said, he gets 13 touches. And he winds up 32 yards short of 1,000 yards. And you're not, I don't think you can convince me that if Brian Brohm had given a shit, that he wouldn't have, like, you can't convince me that Brian Brohm didn't just give up on the idea of it or didn't care about it from the start. Because if I'm Devin Mockaby, I am absolutely livid. Because you're so close as a guy who barely played in the first few games because you're a walk-on. You know, you suddenly get all this national attention. You're close to reaching a goal that you never thought achievable. I mean, you may believe in yourself and all that, but you come in as a walk-on, your fourth or fifth string. Suddenly you vault to the starting position, and then you have a chance to get 1,000 yards. I don't think Devin Mockaby himself would have believed that a year ago. And then to have your coach just take you out of the game and not give you the opportunity must be so infuriating.
Yeah, and to make it even more head-scratching is Dylan Downing was hurt on his only rush, and he did not come back into the game. So your second-string running back's out. Just the head coaching decisions in this one were not great.
I think,
much as we like Austin Burton, like, everyone was screaming for Michael Olamo to come in. He's going to be, you know, the top carryover in this offense, and you wanted to see what he could do. And he did not come out into the game except for one play where Austin Burton's helmet came off.
Right, yeah, and he had to come out.
He didn't come into the game until the third quarter. Like, it was just so detrimental of the personnel choices that it just ruined any positives you could take out of the game for a game that clearly was not going to be won.
Yeah, it's as I said before with Tracy, the only thing I can think of is Brohm and, to a lesser extent, Hagen, Brian Brohm, to be clear, wanted to get the seniors as much time as they could because this is the last time they're going to be able to put on a Purdue uniform, and I respect that. I respect that in a lot of ways, but at the same time, it is still a program you're running, and you have to look toward the future a little bit. You know, if Olamo had come in from, you know, the third drive of the game, wouldn't have made a difference in the outcome. Purdue was not winning this game with either of those guys behind center. It doesn't matter. But to just not give him the opportunity till the game is so far out of hand was a bit strange. But the Mockaby thing gets me fired up more so than the quarterback position. But it's, you know, I don't want this to become the gambling podcast, but I will say, with sports gambling legal in Maryland, I like to dabble in some gambling now and then. And the line, as you wrote in a post for the site, started out, I think, at 8.5. Purdue was 8.5-point dog, I think, when they opened. And then with all the opt-outs, it moved to about 14 or 14.5. Purdue, of course, wound up losing by 56. In about the third quarter of the game, I believe the line moved to -42.5 for Purdue. I put $50. I put $50 on LSU. I did, and I won. And a buddy of mine, who we were in the paint crew together, he was a paint crew president after I'd left. We talked about this, and he said, He doesn't watch a Purdue game, like a big Purdue game, whether in basketball or football, without hedging his bets and betting on the opponent. He goes, because either I'm going to be happy if Purdue wins and I'm not going to care about the $10, you know, $20 I lost, or Purdue's going to lose and I'm going to reap the benefit of, like, you know, $50 back or $100 back. He said he made like $200 or maybe more on the St. Peter's game when Purdue lost because Purdue was such a big favorite and he bet on St. Peter's.
Yeah, that's a way to do it, and it truly is a hedge in your bet. I mean, so that pick six really loomed large for you.
Yeah, it really did. You know, it's like the game is already over. It was just so bad. Again, it was not a game I expected Purdue to win. I really didn't. Even before the opt-outs, it was it just felt like Purdue was going to be overmatched. Maybe that's my nihilism and pessimism because LSU is such a marquee SEC name. And, you know, Brian Kelly and Purdue has never defeated Brian Kelly in a game. But, man, once we had all those opt-outs for Purdue, it just kept getting worse and worse. And I mean, I picked us to lose only, I think, by 31 or something to that effect. And I thought that was optimistic. And, man, losing a bowl game by 56 is not fun. Yeah, so you went to the post-game press conference afterward, correct?
Yes, I did.
Did anyone ask, because Brian Brohm was the coach in attendance?
Yeah.
Did anyone ask him about Maccabee?
Yeah, it was sort of asked about how, as a whole, you know, he had done the season. And Brian Brohm mentioned that he wanted to get him touches today. He wanted to get him, obviously, get him to the 1,000 yards. But he was saying that there were no big plays on the offense at all.
Well,
so,
okay.
I mean, he didn't. So he basically said, well, he didn't break one out, so he didn't get all of the yards he normally does. But yeah, it was kind of a confusing time. You got the sense that Brian Brohm was kind of just getting it over with. And like, okay, you know, we're going to do this one last time. We're going to get it over with. Although not as like tense as his brother normally is.
Right.
But no one wanted to be there after a 56-point loss.
Yeah.
No one wanted to sit there and talk to the media. And I get that. But, that's about as far as he dove into it. And, you know, Purdue didn't really have any big day or big plays throughout the game.
Right, yeah. It's hard to blame a running back for failing to break big plays when no one on the team had big plays. I mean, it seems absurd.
Yeah. I mean, just, I get that there was so many opt-outs. It's just, you didn't expect it to be this bad on
the
field.
But, right, yeah.
So my question is, does this end people's wanting of Drew Brees to be a head coach?
No, not at all. Because no one is going to blame the quarterback coach for what happened in a bowl game, especially when he'd been there for, you know, 2 weeks. At least we got some good social media content out of it. You know, I thought the videos they put out were good. And it's always great to have Drew Brees as an ambassador for the program. But back to Brian Brohm just for a second. I think, obviously, you pointed out he might have had, you know, one foot out the door thinking of Louisville. And we don't know that for sure. But, you know, it certainly seems like it. And as someone who's left the job to go to another job, you don't always put in the best effort those last couple days. That's just the nature of the beast. But if Brian Brohm ever wants to be a head coach, and I assume that he does, or an offensive coordinator away from his brother, which, again, I assume that he wants that, he did himself no favors in this game. The team looked unprepared. The play calling was, I mean, uninspired at best. And he didn't even take care of his players, like Maccabee. So I think he didn't do himself any favors. And, you know, That's his loss. He had a real opportunity here to show what he could be as a coach away from his brother, and he just looked lost. So I don't think he acquitted himself very well at all.
Yeah, and I think, to your point, he had two mobile quarterbacks and never actually did a designed bootleg. I mean, Austin Burton is not a pocket passer, and that's all he had to do. Now, mind you, he would eventually scramble because there was, you know, a lot of pressure on the quarterback all day. I mean, there was that, and then it'd be an overthrow on the sideline, but there was no designed rollouts. I guess the best play of the day for the creative side of the ball was the fake punt that we had with Jack Sullivan getting his 5-yard rush for a first down.
Yeah.
To which I think that drive ended up stalling three plays later.
I believe it did, yeah. Yeah.
So,
man.
No creativity and just an overmatched game. We'll see what sort of effect this has on any other players going forward. But wanted to mention the Deion Burks injury.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to bring up next, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was a scary situation. I mean, he came down after going up for a pass, slammed his head into the ground, and was just still, did not move for probably about 15 minutes. You know, both teams were all kind of, the whole Purdue team was surrounded around him. The whole LSU team was on a knee. It was a scary situation. He had the neck brace on, got stretchered and carted off the field. But I believe they said he was responsive and had feeling to all extremities. That is great news when it comes to like a head and neck injury. So we wish him absolutely the best and speedy recovery from that hit.
Yeah. And I believe he actually has been released from the hospital. So that is great news. Obviously, like just such a terrible situation. Yeah, he was released from hospital, and it was, the quote is, he is doing well. So that is great news for Deion Burks. Obviously a very scary moment for Purdue and for everyone else. You hate to see something like that, especially, you know, with what we saw on Monday Night Football two days ago. So very scary situation, but glad to hear he is doing well. So overall, terrible game, but we're glad you got to go cover it. Last question for you about the Citrus Bowl before we put this nightmare behind us. Would you go cover a bowl game again?
100%. Okay. Absolutely.
So you don't feel like it's your fault?
No. If anything, we can blame Gabby.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, all right. I love it. All right. There we go. So that's the end of the Citrus Bowl. Purdue was not the cheesiest. Turns out LSU was the cheesiest. So we're going to take a break, come back, and talk about another depressing loss for Purdue. This one a bit worse, in my opinion, just because of the stakes. So we will be right back with you, folks. And we are back. So now on to basketball, where our beloved number one ranked Purdue Boilermakers headed to Mackey Arena for a game against Rutgers. Did not have to go to the rack to play Rutgers this time, so we thought all was well. Rutgers came in 9-4 and 1-1 in conference play. Purdue, of course, was 13-0, number one ranked in the country, and 2-0 in conference play. Now, last year, of course, Rutgers defeated Purdue, I believe 70-68, after Rutgers hit a last-second three just beyond midcourt. And in this very game, Rutgers defeated Purdue 65-64.
Yep.
After was it Cam Spencer? Yeah. Hit a 3-pointer to give Rutgers the lead with 10 seconds to go. So I don't know what it is with Rutgers and Purdue and number one rankings, but it is very frustrating to watch, to see it happen two seasons in a row. And before we get into the game itself, I want to be clear. Rutgers played one hell of a game. Rutgers is tough. Rutgers played great defense. They made tough shot after tough shot. They put Purdue in bad situations on offense. And, you know, so kudos to them. They're a well-coached team. And I want to make sure we're not, you know, saying this is a bad loss or a terrible loss, because Rutgers, I think, is going to do very well this season. But, man, no matter who you're playing, you're the number one team. It hurts to lose.
You saw this in this game. Purdue really shot itself in the foot at times. I mean, turnovers, they finished with 13, but just seemed to be the most untimely turnovers. That and their free throw percentage was not great in this one. Shot under 70% from free throw, and just shooting the ball was difficult for them today. I mean, you saw that they shot under 40% from the field, just over 30% from three, which is actually better than they have been all season. But compare that to Rutgers, who shot 40,
right? Yeah, it was an
almost
improvement.
43% behind the arc and over 80% from the free throw line. It's just Rutgers did the fundamental aspects of basketball better today, and they really made a press on Purdue, and they really made Purdue struggle with the press today.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue turned it over 13 times, and so many of those were just absolute boneheaded turnovers. I mean, Brandon Newman had a pretty good game shooting the ball, 3 of 6 from three, but had three turnovers, and they were bad turnovers. I mean, just throwing the ball to where he thought someone was going to go, and there was no one there. You know, a turnover, I believe, directly after another Purdue turnover, or I'm sorry, after a turnover on Rutgers. Mm-hmm. So took away an advantage that we had. And man, it felt like every time Purdue had an opportunity in that second half to take the lead, Purdue just missed that opportunity, whether it was a missed shot or a turnover. They just couldn't pull into the lead. And after being down for such a long time, they really couldn't get over that mental hump. And it was so, so annoying to watch, man. It's just, we were so close the entire game.
I mean, they did eventually take the 2-point lead with 30 seconds left. So they got over the hump. Yeah.
Yep. Off of a Fletcher Lawyer
his
three.
His only three of the night, right? No, he had two. Okay.
No, he was two. Two of five.
You got over the hump, and then just as a fan, you're thinking, okay, they score two. They can't score three. And just one little overshoot on defense by Ethan Morton, a double move by Cam Spencer, and he buries it.
I want to ask you about that. So there's 30 seconds left. Lawyer hits the three. Purdue goes up 64-62. I thought that was it. I was like, okay, you know, we can hold them. Even if they score, we've got time, and the momentum's with us. Even if it goes to overtime, I think we can hang on. I was stoked we were going to get out of here with a victory.
Mm-hmm.
Rutgers was out of timeouts, and Painter calls a timeout. And the thinking is, take Lawyer out
right,
and put Morton in so that Morton can play defense. And I completely understand that thinking. I understand the logic behind it. You want your best defenders out there. And Lawyer had a bad game defensively. I get it. But the opponent doesn't have a timeout. They're suddenly down by 2 points with 30 seconds left. Why take the timeout there? Do you think it was a good decision or a bad decision?
I understand the decision.
I would lean more
on taking the timeout, just because the difference in defense between Ethan Morton and Fletcher Lawyer is larger to me than the difference between having a fully drawn up play for a 30 second time. Like, it's not really going to change much. It's not like you have 4 seconds left and need to draw up a play. Like, you have a full set. So at that point, you're just going to kind of continue to do what you've been doing throughout the game and not draw up the play to win at all. So it's either going to happen or it's not.
Yeah, I mean, I agree to an extent that 30 seconds, Rutgers would have been able to get into their offense, you know, Coach could have been yelling from the sideline, telling them, you know, whatever set he wanted them to run. I'm sure they have something in the playbook for these situations. But to me, I would have preferred to leave Lawyer out there and make them beat you without giving them a chance to regroup. Because down by two, 30 seconds left, they're going to be scrambling a little bit. Even if there is, you know, still 30 seconds left, there is a feeling of, I have to do this. I have to make a bucket here. So to me, I thought it was a little confusing to give them an out. And unfortunately, you know, it didn't work. And also, Morton was the guy who was a step slow on defense that allowed Spencer to be so open and make that three. So hindsight is 20/20, and I get that. But it was a tough decision when you lose immediately after. Yeah,
that's another aspect that was talked about a lot on Twitter after the game, was Ethan Morton over-helping on Paul Mulcahy. Whether or not he should have been over-helping, because Mulcahy was, if he got a 2-point
basket,
he was
killing us.
Okay, but obviously the pass for a 3-point basket was what killed Purdue. So I know Braden Smith was on Mulcahy, and he clearly has a height advantage. So I almost would have preferred if Morton didn't overhelp for obvious reasons and had Mulcahy just go up for a shot, even if he made it. But like you said, hindsight is 20/20.
I mean, I get Morton's you know, maybe it's instinct, maybe it was what he was told to do, I don't know, urge to shade Mulcahy a little more, because in recent, you know, the last 5 minutes of the game, Mulcahy had just been hitting everything. He was the reason Rutgers was still in the game at that point. He was 7 of 13 overall, 1 of 1 from 3. He was their leading scorer with 16. So I get wanting to follow him and try to prevent him from scoring a bucket, because you assumed that Rutgers was going to go to him, and they did. And, you know, kudos to Mulcahy for understanding that he was in some trouble there and finding Spencer for the open 3. So it was a great shot by him. But final question, I think, about this game before we look ahead to the rest of the week for Purdue. What did you think of the final possession for Purdue? Not the one where they had 0.4 seconds. Nothing was going to happen there. I mean, that was a nightmare scenario. But roughly 10 seconds left, and Purdue gets the ball down low to Edie, and then it's passed out, and then it's passed back to Edie, and then it's passed out and passed around before ultimately, was it Brandon Newman took the final shot?
It was on, it was essentially the radio broadcast. So I didn't see what happened, but like you said, I knew it was drop down low to Edie, which you knew was going to happen. It's just whether or not Edie goes to work and takes on a double team and still tries to score, or he passes it back out. I mean, that's Purdue's offense in a nutshell. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my question is this. We know the ball is going to Edie. The opponent knows the ball is going to Edie. And it's ultimately Edie's decision to make. Is he going to go up against a double team? Because you know he's going to get double teamed. He might even get triple teamed, as I believe he had at least... I know he was double teamed, and I believe there was a third guy near him, shading toward him. So there were at least three Scarlet Knights right around him at a certain point. But you're down by one. You need 1 point to get to overtime, 2 to win. And Edie had gotten fouled numerous times. Rutgers had been fouling all day. Rutgers was in the double bonus. Mm-hmm. Zach Edie is our star. And right or wrong, I want to win or lose with Zach Edie. And I love Ethan Morton. I'm probably Ethan Morton number one fan club. But I don't want Ethan Morton... I think I might be looking at the end of the first half. Regardless of who took the three. Yes, I think it was Brandon Newman. This whole thing has gone terribly wrong, folks. Okay, I was right the first time, and then ESPN made me doubt myself. Brandon Newman had... You know, he was the best shooter of the day. And I get that. But just like I said in the previous game where Fletcher Lawyer took a three when Purdue only needed two, I want to take the bucket that's easier. I want to take the two. I want to give Edie the ball and have him go up and either make the bucket or get fouled. I think, you know, those are the most likely scenarios if you give Zach Edie the ball and he goes to the hoop. Yes, I know he could miss. Yes, I know he could get blocked, when, you know, whatever. But I like my odds with Zach Edie taking the ball and taking the shot. But again, hindsight 2020, as it's been now three times in this basketball discussion. But we knew Purdue was going to lose a game eventually. They weren't going to go undefeated, but it's just unfortunate that they lose at home to Rutgers once again. It's very frustrating.
Purdue was also kind of thrown off the rhythm in the first half just from fouls. This is one of the first times that Zach Edie has been in foul trouble early. So you saw that kind of balloon into a 10-point Rutgers lead at halftime. So ultimately, Purdue was able to get back in it. But sometimes you just dig yourself into a hole and you're just making it difficult on yourself. And that seemed to be Purdue just couldn't get out of their own heads Monday.
Yeah, I think that's right. So that is it on this one. Purdue loses their first game of the season. So now, you know, for the rest of the week, Purdue's got, this is, you know, we're recording this on Wednesday night. Purdue has two games left this week. One of their hardest weeks, I'd say, of the season, if not the hardest week. They have to go to Ohio State on Thursday. That is a tip-off at 7 p.m., and then on Sunday, they head actually to play Penn State, but that game is not in State College. That game is going to be played in Philadelphia at the Palestra, which, is a historic arena for those who don't know what it is, but it is one of the oldest college basketball arenas, and it's been open since the 1927. That's right. And I actually will be in attendance at that game, assuming everything goes well in my household. No one gets even more sick. I should be there, so it's going to be exciting to see a game there. I've never been, but what do we think of these two games? One on the road and one in a neutral site. I mean, does Purdue now need both of these they want to stay in the Big Ten race?
No, you'd like Purdue just to take both anyway, just to strengthen. You know, they loosen their grip a little bit against Rutgers, and you'd like them to retake the command of the Big Ten again. But this is going to be a difficult stretch. I mean, Chris Holtmann and Micah Shrewsbury are two top-tier coaches in the Big Ten. I mean, they've got their firepower, and yeah, going to Columbus is never easy for Purdue. So you like to see Purdue bounce back after a tough loss. You want to see what this team is made of and all of the, you know, all of the cliches, but it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so true. I mean, they're cliches for a reason.
See how they come back. And with Purdue being featuring such young players, we don't know what that'll look like yet. So it's almost another – every game seems to be a make-or-break game in a sense, but we're going to learn some more about what this Purdue team is made of going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's like a different kind of test. You know, we had the huge test when we went out to the Phil Knight tournament, and we passed that test with flying colors. And this, you know, is a whole other level of test. You know, you've taken your first loss at home, right, to, again, a very good Rutgers team. But now you've got to respond in just 3 days' time, and you've got to go on the road to Ohio State, and you've got to show them who you are and what you're made of. And this is an Ohio State team that's currently ranked 24th. So this is no slouch of a team. And then following that, in just a couple days, on Sunday, you got to head to a neutral site game against Penn State, against a coach that a lot of these guys, you know, played for. Who's now the head coach. So that is a little added bonus there. And this is a Penn State team, I think, who surprised a lot of people, doing a lot better than most thought they would. And they're currently in a really tight game with Michigan right now, only down, I believe, right now 5 points as I talk. And this is at Michigan, just under 3 minutes to play. So this isn't the Penn State team, you know, with one guy like Taylor Battle or Pringle, who you think you can just shut him down or allow him to score 30 and you're still going to win. This right. Penn State team is a lot better than we thought they would be.
Jalen Pickett can definitely put some points on the board. I mean, he's one of those guys that he's going to be a all Big Ten player. You don't know which line yet, but he's got a lot of talent, and he can definitely take over a game. So, and it's, again, like you said, they surround Jalen Pickett with other players, unlike those teams of years past. So, a lot of weapons. Ohio State, no slouch either. I mean, they have a lot of weapons as well. So, it's just going to be a fun week of basketball. We're going to talk some victories into existence.
Yeah, that's right. So this is I don't want to say make or break, because I don't think that's true this early in the season. But this is Purdue's hardest week, I think, of the season. Three games: Rutgers, Ohio State, Penn State. None of them pushovers, and Purdue has already lost the first one. So I want to stay in the Big Ten race. I want to win that 25th Big Ten title, as you talked about in our New Year's episode. So to do that, I think Purdue has to at least split these two games. Because if they go on a three-game losing streak, that could really demoralize them. They're a young team. You don't know how they're going to respond to that. So really would like to win one of these two and come out of it at least 1-2 over this really tough three-game stretch. So anything else to look forward to in these two games?
I'd just like to see how some of these players are going to come out of a tough loss. I mean, obviously the freshmen, but just see if they can bounce back. They're starting to shoot better, it seems, but see if they can continue the trend upwards.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, because you just never know how a young team is going to respond to that first loss, especially after they rocketed so high up so early, from unranked to number one. So it will be interesting to see just how they start this game right against Ohio State tomorrow night. So it should be a great game, and we're going to cover both of these. We may have to record next week on Monday, since I will be in Philadelphia for that 6 p.m. tip. Will not obviously be back in Maryland till probably 10 or 11 o'clock, depending on how late that goes and what traffic is like. So the next podcast may be a bit delayed for you, but rest assured it will come out. We'll have all your coverage of these next two games, and looking forward to the games after that, which include Purdue heading back to Mackey Arena and taking on Nebraska ball. So for Ryan and myself, thanks so much for listening. We will get with you next week. Boiler up. And tomorrow.